Hey, this is Melissa Bartel, the Vasa Mermaid, and you are listening to Tales from the Tub.
I only touched your love when the tips of my fingers tried to clutch your love. I'm sick of the soap in a bathtub, love. I need something to hold.
It's Holiday Lee's here at the Bathtub Mermaid, and I didn't record a podcast yesterday, partly because I couldn't talk, and partly because the post that I wrote for Holiday Lee's yesterday was just really, not yesterday, Wednesday, was just really not something I could easily record without having a ton of audio clips that I'm honestly too lazy to go find. So you should go read it at missmelissa.com because it's all about the history of the Three Dog Night song Black and White and how it was originally a folk song that Pete Seeger was the first person to record, and it's a direct response to Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas, and it has all these lyrics that if you've only ever heard the Three Dog Night version, you have no idea exist. Promise you. Tonight, however, I'm going to talk about something different. I'm going to talk about the fact that I have an addiction. I am addicted to the Nutcracker. Not the story by E.T.A. Hoffman, but the ballet based upon the story. You know the one. The one with the music composed by Tchaikovsky that everyone trots out in December. I blame my Auntie Annette for this addiction. Of course, she wasn't really my auntie at all, but a dear friend of the family, one who always seemed to waltz rather than merely walking wherever she was going, and who always smelled like the forest at Christmas, even though I'm pretty sure the most rural place she ever lived was suburban Connecticut. Every junkie has a gateway drug, and mine was a book. It was a book called A Very Young Dancer by Jill Krementz, and it's not a story so much as a captioned photo essay about a young girl named Stephanie, who was a student at the School of American Ballet, which is the feeder school for the New York City Ballet. She's cast as Marie in the annual production of, you guessed it, The Nutcracker. It was Auntie Annette who gave me this book, a book I still have, by the way, the year I was 6 or 7. Amazon says the publication date was October 1976, but I'm pretty sure I had it that August. Then again, Auntie Annette had connections, so it's very possible she gave me an advanced copy. I have vivid memories of being the first person of my friends to know anything about this book. Let's assume that my memories are correct, and I was 6. When I was 6 years old, I was still taking ballet lessons, and I have an equally vivid memory of another aunt, a blood aunt's dog, eating my ballet slippers while they were under my feet at the table the following summer. But really, it doesn't matter. That book got me hooked on the Nutcracker, and I remained loyal to it decades after I stopped taking ballet lessons or actually any kind of dance classes whatsoever. But really, isn't The Nutcracker the first ballet for almost every little girl? I mean, I guess some kids see Capella first, but it's not quite as engaging or as magical. By the way, has anyone ever noticed how many ballets are based on some kind of a doll or something like that coming to life? And not just ballets, but a lot of children's stories. Anyway, my first memory of seeing The Nutcracker live is when we lived in Arvada, Colorado, and I was 9. My best friend at the time and I had been in a fight for the weeks leading up to the performance, but our mothers had bought a row of seats for the 4 of us and her little sister. Each of us independently had worked out how our mothers would sit next to each other with us on their far side so we wouldn't have to talk. Of course, by the time the actual day came, we'd started speaking again, which was good because for weeks afterwards, we spent all of our time trying our best to recreate the ballet in their basement bedroom. But it was also bad because my mother worked with one of the dancers, or knew her mother, and had arranged for us to go backstage. And that meant that I had to share that experience. But whatever the circumstances, my addiction was cemented at that point. Since then, I've seen numerous productions, both live and on video. San Francisco Ballet's version is one of my favorites, but I grew up on PBS's annual airing of the American Ballet Theater version with Mikhail Baryshnikov and Gazi Kirkland, and that's the one I still know best. I've seen the movie that was made out of the Pacific Northwest Ballet's version. That one features sets designed by Maurice Sendak. Yes, that, Maurice Sendak. It's a favorite as well, and just the other night, I was watching a version of the New York City Ballet's interpretation that was formed years ago and features a Home Alone-era Macaulay Culkin as the Nutcracker Prince, no lie. It's free on Amazon streaming if you have Prime, by the way. As I've grown older, I've started to see different things in the different versions of the story. For example, Marie, who is sometimes called Clara, is often played by a child, as is, in fact, the Nutcracker Prince. These interpretations usually have lots of children in the first act and very few in the second, only those who pop out from under Mother Ginger's skirt, while Marie and the Prince pretty much just watch Act Two from a throne all the way upstage. Other interpretations use an adult dancer as Marie or Clara or whatever you want to call her, or at least an older teenager, and play up her budding romance with the Nutcracker Prince. Sometimes they even get an act two pas de deux. The Nutcracker Prince is often introduced in the Act 1 party scene as Drosselmeyer's apprentice or nephew, which means that if Drosselmeyer isn't merely an affectionate uncle, Marie and the boy are kissing cousins. Let's not think about that. A rare few interpretations, and Pacific Northwest Ballet is one of them, add a dash, and I mean just the merest hint of unresolved sexual tension between Marie, Clara, and Drosselmeyer. Tell me that's not a fanfic waiting to be written. I haven't cataloged all the details of every production, obviously, but I do know this. During December, there is a version of the Nutcracker playing somewhere almost every day. In the next 2 weeks, my DVR will be recording at least 6 different productions, only one of which I've seen before. There are at least 7, and actually, someone corrected me today, and I heard from NPR, our local NPR station, that there are at least 20 live productions of the Nutcracker happening in the next 3 weeks within 30 miles of my house. I'm thinking I might drag my husband to one. He's only ever been to the ballet once, and it was a production of Peer Gynt, and it was okay, but it's not the Nutcracker. I, of course, always prefer the live performance experience. The thrill when the overture starts to play. The way the audience always gasps when the Christmas tree starts to grow, which is really Marie shrinking, of course, but it's still cool. The little girls all dressed up for what is, for many, their first time in a real theater and the obligatory trip to get hot chocolate when I was a kid, or Irish coffee, now, afterward. Or going back to the actual ballet in the second act when you watch the Sugar Plum Fairy and her cavalier, or the Dewdrop Fairy dancing with the flowers. The second act of Nutcracker in most productions is pure dance. It totally forgets that there was ever a plot. But that's okay, because the dancing is always amazing. But even if I don't make it to a live performance this year, even if I don't make it to one next year, I don't mind, because I'm looking forward to having my dates with my Nutcracker Prince over the weeks between now and Christmas. He'll bring the great music and muscular thighs, and I'll bring coffee, Danish butter cookies, and my appreciation of the arts. And when Christmas comes, and the magic is over for a year, because a post-Christmas Nutcracker is just as sad as the early morning walk of shame after a poorly chosen one-night stand, I'll put my Nutcracker, the one sent to me from Germany, back in its box and focus once more on more contemporary stories. But only till next year, of course. I mean, you can only go so long till your next fix. I'm going to play a little more of that cello music that I really love, and then I'll be back with the credits. Thanks for listening. Bathtub Mermaid, Tales from the Tub, is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartel and is recorded and produced using the Boss Jock iPad application. It's released under Creative Commons International Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. Music for The Bathtub Mermaid is provided by Mevio's Music Alley, a great resource for PodSafe music. The standard opening song is Soap in a Bathtub by Stony. The closing song is You Can Use My Bathtub by Little Tom. Additional music used for the Holiday Lease project is A Podcast Christmas Theme by Tom Shad and Village Song, composed by David Popper and performed by Cello Journey. Questions or comments? I want to hear them. Use the comment form at the bottom of each entry, or you can also contact me via Twitter, @Meliss, MelySse. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.
Steam is drifting into the night. It's cold outside. coming off a scary street. Come on inside. I know how it feels, babe, to feel unclean. Most everybody knows to feel that stain so deep inside. And still it shows, but you can use my bathtub. Understand, you can use my bathtub. Yes, you can.